Okay, so yesterday we talked about Yaakov's confrontation with, not Yaakov, well, it's this week's Torah portion. Last week Yaakov was with an angel, and in this Sefer Yeshua is with an angel. And I'm sure there's a lot of connections. But we were discussing what the angel was telling Yeshua, and he was citing certain mistakes that were made, and that we applied it to how it could apply in our times as well. There are more contemporary commentaries who say, and it's certainly very applicable as well, in terms of what Yeshua was really asking was, what is the proper balance between our religious obligations and the practical need to wage wars of conquest or defense? In other words, there are things that we have to do, things that we have to do. We have to go to war. Other hand, we have to learn Torah. So how do you balance that? And that's a difficult issue. Taking the land of Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. And what the Gemara has been telling us is that that presupposes that the mitzvahs of the Torah are going to be obeyed as well as doing this mitzvah. It says in Sefer Vayikra and in many places that our possession of the land is premised on our proper observance of the mitzvahs. Torah says, if you follow my decree, at the end of Sefer Vayikra, right? It's Parshas Buchukosai. It says, if you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, you'll dwell securely in the land. I'll provide you with peace in the land, and you'll lie down, and no one's going to frighten you, etc., etc. So, the point that the Malach is telling Yehoshua is that a Jewish soldier does not abandon the Torah when he goes into a battlefield. And on the contrary, you're accompanied by a Kohen who's anointed especially for this purpose, who reminds the army of the ethics and the philosophical mindset that's expected of someone who's in the Jewish army. And as it says in Sefer Dvarim, and you'll say to them, Shema Yisrael, listen, Jewish people, you're drawing near to the battle against your enemies. And Rashi over there comments that even if you only have the merit of saying Shema Yisrael, that's a big merit to take into battle. So when you're going into battle, you have to remember that you are fighting Hashem's battles. And that's got to be apparent by the motivation that you have and the commitment and the ethical standards that you take with you into battle. So, therefore, really, you know, warfare, as far as Jews are concerned, is not supposed to be a place where people who don't have morality, they don't belong over there. And really, it's better function with those who are tzaddikim. And that's what Rashi over there in Sefer Dvarim, when it talks about the Kohen Mashiach, says, and those who are afraid to go out to battle, so, and those that are faint-hearted. So, Rabbi Yossi Aglili over there says, in Gemara Sota, explaining what the coin says, frightened and faint-hearted means you're frightened because you've done Averis. Right? And the Avera of even just talking between, putting on your tefillin. Certainly talking in shul would be one of the Averis you'd have to be sent back from the battlefield. So you gotta really have a certain degree of moral integrity. So this was really the final quandary that Yeshua had, as the battle for Yericho was about to happen. You know, what would be the effect on the Jewish soul and the Jewish psyche, as a consequence of warfare, violence, and brutality? In other words, when you're going to war, your aggression is unleashed, and it's hard to hold it back while you're in warfare. It's hard to hold it back when you return to life as a civilian. And that could really dominate the soldier's personality and affect all his relationships. And so all kinds of psychological things that go on to people who come back from war. And they don't necessarily come back as stable people because of the effects that war has. And because when you go to war, you see, how do you solve your problems? By killing people. That's basically, the problem is the enemy. How do you deal with the enemy? You kill him. And that's about it. And that's how all of life's problems are taken care of in the battlefield. Now, That might be the way you do it in the battlefield, but not in life. Not when you come back from the battlefield, right? So we're supposed to be a mamleches kohanim and a goy kadosh. How can you remain priestly and holy when wars and weapons are required to protect the Torah's interests? So this becomes a catch-22 that Yeshua is finding himself in over here now. Now remember, he doesn't know yet he's going to find out in the next chapter with the Battle of Jericho. He doesn't know what's going on over there. But this is really, according to some Meforshim, this is the implication of this prophetic vision that Yeshua is seeing of the Malach now. It says that he sees, behold, a man is standing opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand. And Yeshua says, are you for us or are for your enemies? So the deeper meaning can be, yes, the sword is a powerful weapon, but the sword is a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword. What do I mean? As long as the Jews had been in the desert and Hashem miraculously provided for all the needs that the people had, there was no danger of ever being corrupted by the effects of war and effects of the sword. Similarly, when Jews would in history be in exile, when Jews were not responsible for their own self-defense, and sometimes they paid a heavy price for that, unfortunately, we developed a certain aversion to violence of any kind. And if you look at it in history, when we were in Gaulis, the secular Jews were always the advocates of pacifism, nonviolence, and all those kinds of things, because we really weren't in any position. If you don't have the right to self-defense, you would condemn any types of aggression, right? However, in times like we live in now, or in times that Yeshua was about to go through, as he thought, pacifism is not a viable option. You have a ruthless enemy, and a ruthless enemy will exploit any weaknesses that we have. So now that we see that, so now the question is, the drawn sword that he sees from the Malach can either be a blessing or a curse, depending how we use it. So on the one hand, war, and in the global sense, you know, that really represents human failure. It means people can't get along. Society can't deal with their issues in a normal way. I mean, war should not be the way life is had, right? But on the other hand, as Rav Kook talks about, and we mentioned long ago, war can be a way of perfecting the world, bringing the ultimate redemption. Rav Kook talks about how Mashiach wakes up, the footpaths of Mashiach come when war comes. So now it's a conundrum. So Yeshua, what he sees in the Malach is, how would going to battle change the Jewish soldier? Would the sword be for us? Is it a necessary weapon? And we use the weapon strictly to fulfill the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Or is it for our enemies? Is it something that will work against us? Is it going to be an uncontrollable force that leaves, you know, society vulnerable and terrified, and we're going to become a bunch of murderers? Or as Lahavdol, Elif Havdolis, as Golda Meir said to, I think it was Nasser, Sadat, right? She says, I can forgive you for killing all the Jewish people and all the murder you did, but I can never forgive you to turning our boys into killers. That was a line like that. I can never forgive you for that. You've turned us into murderers. Because we have to learn how to kill people. Right? So that was his problem. And that's what the Malach is coming to come with that sword drawn. He says, we're going into battle. What's gonna be? Are we gonna become like the Canaanites now? We're gonna now resolve our problems by killing people? So what's the answer of the Malach? What was the answer of the Malach? Right? So the Malach says, as the answer is in most issues in life, it depends on your free will choice. It depends what you're going to make of it. And he says, no. He says, I am the Sar Tzavo. I am the commander of the hosts of Hashem. And he says, Atabasi. Now I have come. So what have I come for? I've come, as we've explained yesterday, I've come to rebuke you for the neglect of Torah study. Right? So you've already kind of messed up a little in your using of war, because you already decided time to shut down the yeshivas at night, and et cetera, all the other averas. So you began to think that the fighting war is everything. So he said, but you didn't know. You didn't know. I can't blame you so much. But if you use, so if the use of your weapons and war is guided by the dictates of the Torah, then you'll be successful in the Torah and you'll remain a principled people. But if you neglect the Torah and you let other things get involved in what's going on eventually, then the use of the arms, will corrode your ethical core. So that's the issue. Atabasi, I'm coming with this problem. And then as well, when he tells him to walk barefooted, he says, and it's not an easy job. You're going to be very sensitive. As we said yesterday, you have to be very sensitive to what's going on. And you're going to have to very carefully draw a line between compassion and battle and Torah and that. And it's not going to be an easy line to go. But there is a way, and you got to realize that Torah always still has to permeate everything you're doing when you're going into battle. Right? So that was the answer. So it doesn't have to make you a worse people, but you have to realize how you go into battle. And as we'll see when we do the next parak, and I don't know what happened to Rev Dessler's piece. It got photocopied, right? But I don't know where it is. We may use it today. But you'll see that there's a Torah way to go into battle, and the Torah way will not have to compromise. And that's what the Malach is hitting him on. He says, what happened? You stopped learning Torah. You stopped the Korban Talmud. You stopped Puravu. You know, you've made the battle become everything. And if you're going to let fighting the war become everything in life, not. And that's the way it is with everything. You can't let any one thing, you know, be more important than Torah and push Torah aside. So it's interesting. And that's what the Israeli army now has had to deal with, and it has chosen not to deal with it. And that's the tragedy, that the Israeli army, based on the Israeli government, does not allow Torah to dictate its agenda of going to battle. And there's certain things that, you know, the Torah is just pushed aside. The fact that you have female soldiers is totally against the Torah. It's totally against the Torah. There's no leniency for it at all. We didn't have enough people, you know, Narishkeit didn't have enough people. And if what they have is enough. And when they had women going to battle, so they're outnumbered instead of 100 to 1 to 99 to 1. That makes a big difference. Right? The Torah tells us women can't bear arms. Finished. That's the answer to your Shiloh. Women don't bear. How are we going to win? That's God's problem. It's not your problem. A woman is supposed to bring children into the world. She's not supposed to take lives away from this world. It's not what's the nature of a woman, and it destroys the nature of a woman. And now that they don't, you know, they have enough souls, they don't need the women there. Okay, you want the women to do Sheirut Lumi. You want the women to volunteer to work in, to be forced to work in hospitals. Okay. You need people to work in hospitals. You need people to attend the wounded and things like that. There's a lot of things that are non-combat things that you need national service. So fine, that's not a problem. But that was a very critical point, and that was one of the things that Ben Gurion was pushing. Wanted to push on the Frum Jews, and the Chazon Ish fought strongly against him. And they threatened, the Israeli government threatened, if you're not going to let women go into the army, we're going to cut off all funding for any kind of Jewish schools. And Chazon Ish stood firm and says, I don't care. And there were times where the government did very unethical things in terms of, they would say, okay, if you're religious, you don't, they finally came to an agreement, if you're from woman, you don't have to go to the army. So what did they do? So you have all these Sephardi girls. And nothing against Sephardim, Chas v'Shalom, but they didn't exactly have the financial resources to educate their daughters as well as the Ashkenazim, because they had to wind up doing private schooling, right? They didn't have the same resources. So you can imagine, a Frum girl, but she didn't go to a Beis Yaakov. Okay? So they know what it is to live Frum in this, but they don't know all the details. So they would give them tests, and give them like scholarly tests, you know, of citations somewhere in the Navi. Nevertheless, these girls didn't learn any Navi, and they failed the test, and they have to go to the army. You only don't go if you pass the test. If you're not, you must not be religious. And they would purposely give them those kinds of tests and would force them to go on. It was never really big problems. And you could see what happens. The fact that you have an army of men and women, the whole purpose of the Israeli army is to make the young generation not moral. It's a breeding ground to make it a not moral place. Finish. That is the goal. That is the goal. The hidden agenda is to make it as secular and non-religious as possible and to bring as much filth into young adults' minds as possible. And that's what goes on over there. It's not a question of what goes on over there. In terms of kashrus, you know, it's not the highest standards of kashrus. It's not the kashrus of Mahadrin that would enable religious people to be involved in the army as well. And of course, the decisions that they make and what they do in terms of war are certainly not Torah-based decisions. And quite often, their decisions are in conflict with what the Torah says. For example, in Jenin and in Shechem 5 years ago, right? They had the soldiers doing ridiculous things, going house to house in an Arab country. You carpet bomb the place, and the hell with them. And that's the way you have to do it. That's the Torah solution. These guys are trying to kill you. Trying to kill you. You know, lo sechaya kol neshama. You got to wipe them out. No, instead you go hand to hand and have all your soldiers get killed. And what happens then? And to show, and God to show you that you were wrong, you were afraid they'd say you massacred them. They claimed a massacre anyway. Even there was no massacre. And they said you were massacring them anyway. So what did it help you anyway? And so much loss of life took place because of that. Now I'm not saying they still are more compassionate than other armies, but that doesn't matter. You can't compare, the problem is you can't compare our army to other armies. You have to compare it to God's army. Yes, we may be compassionate. Yes, they've developed tanks in a way that if they get hit, they can get out of the tank and their life can be saved. Yeah, but well, that's just for selfish reasons. We've got to keep as many soldiers as we have. We're not going to leave anybody behind because you want the troops to be motivated. It is a good military strategy, right? But then again, there's a lot of things that don't conform. And they don't abide by halacha, as you clearly see, giving up land where they shouldn't give up land, etc., etc. They're not going in concert with what the Gedolim have to say. So therefore, that's what he's saying. You know, remove the shoe from your foot, for the place which you are standing on is holy. Right. So the point is, if you fight these wars, you have to be mindful that even the battlefield is holy. And that their camp has to be sanctified, like it says in Sefer Devarim, and your personal life has to be pure and chaste as you go to war. And therefore the place for which you wage war is holy. And the war you fight is not, here's the point, the war you fight, he's telling Yeshua, is not a war for territory. It's a war for holiness itself. That's what the war is. It's a war of holiness, not a war for territory. The reason we had a mitzvah to conquer the land of Israel, because it was a war of holiness. We have to drive out the unholy people who are affecting the world in a very negative way. That's what the war is. It's not a fight primarily for territory. Territory is something that can be traded, exchanged, surrendered, like any other real estate, possible. But sanctity can never be bartered. You can't barter sanctity. And sanctity emerges from a different type of existence. So if the place that you are standing is holy, then a different approach to warfare is expected. It's a different land you're about to enter. Your attachment to the land's a different type of attachment, etc., etc. So that was the vision, and that was the shiloh that Yeshua had. Could we successfully integrate the ethics of the Torah into the practice of war? And could we impart that upon the people as they take over the land? And with the Malach saying to remove your shoes and to realize that this whole aspect of war is a sanctified aspect, you're required to fight sanctified wars. And you're going to live by all different criteria. And therefore, who were the people that went to war? Who were the soldiers who went to war? Only the tzaddikim. Only the tzaddikim could go to war. And as we'll see in the next chapter, that the conventional wars were not exactly the kind of wars that were meant to be fought. Okay, you had a question, Mitch? I'm sorry. I didn't...
Well, you sort of mentioned it. I think practical side to this. For example, you always say that we can't just rely on Hashem when we're sick. We have to go to the doctor.
Yep.
So by the same token, can we fight a battle for 12 hours during the day and then expect your soldiers to study Torah for 6 hours at night?
No.
Before going into battle the next day?
No. If you're in combat, you're fighting. There's no question about it. And if you have to come, you don't stop fighting. If you're holed up in a bunker, right? You don't say, okay, I want to learn for 6 hours in the bunker while they're shooting at you. Obviously not. Obviously not. But when now the point is, now there's a lull in the action. There's always lulls in the action, right? There's always lulls in the action. So what are you doing while there's a lull in the action? So what do goyim do? They play cards, look at magazines. That's what they do. So you have to have a shear. You have to have a shear. It's at night. Let's get a Gemara and let's learn now. Let's be able to daven. Now that you can daven, that's got to be really. And again, it's no different lahavdol than work. As we're saying, work is mochama. So okay, I'm not telling you not to work. Chas v'shalom, you need to work. But you have to have bitachon Hashem that you work a certain amount, then you stop. There's a time to not work. There's a time to go to minyan. There's a time to learn, and there's a time to work. And it's not, I'm only there to work. It's that mindset. The mindset, and again, for men, this is a harder issue than women. Women are very good at multitasking and can walk on. Men are very focused. Okay, this is what I'm doing. I can't do anything else until I finish this job. That's their problem. Right? So okay, I got this job and I'm not gonna go home, dear, till I finish the account. But I don't have to have it ready. But I want to get it done. It's got to get done. You can let it go. You did a lot today. You worked for 8 hours today. You really did a hard job, and that's good. Now put it aside. It'll be finished tomorrow. The world won't end, and now you do. You go to learn Torah and do the things you have to do. Right? We tend to this idea of deadlines and this and that. We tend to not stand our ground and say, "Well, I'm sorry, it won't be ready till the next day." And you have to have some bitachon Hashem that you're not going to lose your business. There is an aspect of bitachon Hashem that you have to have. And it can't be, no. If I have to cut, the client has to be super happy with me. You have to say, listen, I'm sorry. You know, I work this long and then I have to go home. And that's the whole work ethic now, right? The young professionals that they're bringing in, part of the testing of them isn't so much what you know. Are you willing to prepare to give up your life? Right? The young accountants, right? They told, are you ready to give up your life for the company? Then we'll take you. If you're going to want to have a life outside the company, we're not interested in you. Right? That's the way it is. It's a big nesoyan. You can't accept such a job if that's what it's going to require. Give up. It really means give up your Yiddishkeit. Yeah, of course you can go to shul on Shabbos. Okay. But it means you don't daven in a minyan. You don't daven. I don't have to explain. Right? But that's the sentence. You go to battle. Battle is everything? Yeah. Of course you have to battle, but you have to battle. And then there's not battling. What are you doing with the free time? You find in the Israeli army, they do not, the allowances they give for Haredim are pitiful. Anyone who is, Orthodox, right? They give you like 20 minutes for shacharis. Is this enough time to pray? It's not enough time to pray. Like, this is during training. What's the problem? You know, they give the guy how much it takes to daven. If it takes him 45 minutes, it takes him 45 minutes. Yeah. But, you know, they don't let you get up early. You're not allowed to get up early in the army because you have to have enough sleep. You have to go to bed at a certain time. You got to get up. You can't get up early because they give you a rigorous training, right? No, the rigorous training is going to make a difference if you give the guy another 25 minutes to daven during the day. But it's like there's such a disdain for anything that smacks of religion in that army. And of course, they have to give you something. So they'll give you the minimum. And say, in 20 minutes, you have to daven. That's enough to pray because they can't envision anything more than that. So what kind of daven does the guy get? Right? So that's the point we're saying over here. There is what you have to do, you have to do. But what you don't have to do, you don't have to do. And you have to, it should be every army base should have a base medrash. What's the shaila? Every army base should have a base medrash. Should have a shul. And not everyone has a fully equipped army base with svarim and everything. So people should be able to learn. Right? Place to daven. And davening is the main. The first thing you do in the morning is not get up and do all the other Nairishkeit. First thing you do is you daven. And that's what that's basic training. To daven, shachris, mincha, marv. And to have a seder and learning. And the basic training can be a little longer. You know, it's very possible and doable kinds of things. And that's what happens. And ultimately that produces the kind of society that you have. The secular society, the secular government, the secular army has produced a secular society that is corrupt. Plain and simple. You see, the proof is in the pudding. All the generals and all guys are the most corrupt people in the world. Not even on Goyish standards, they're corrupt. Although now the whole standard is different now, because the standard is corruption is acceptable. So there's no problem now. See, that's the solution. Even the oppositions now, they no longer oppose so much for ethics of morality because they themselves have moral problems, and it's kind of, there will become a silent agreement. We're not going to look at your moral problems if you don't look at our moral problems, and let's just kind of let things ride. I mean, why isn't Olmert bounced out already by now? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because the opposition doesn't want to bounce out because they're going to look at them, they're going to bounce them all out. They're going to bounce them all out. So there's no morals. Where did they learn this from? They learned it by being a bunch of murderers and not following Torah ethics. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, further what Mitch was saying, that I get this Shabbos halacha sheet, and a couple of years ago in the Lebanese war, there's some questions that these Hesder Yeshiva boys asked when they were put into, they found themselves in a bombed out building on Friday night, and they had all these halachic questions they were asking about, can you, what if you don't have a cup, what's acceptable as a cup, and they elevated...
That's right.
This thing. They took a terrible situation and they elevated it into the realm of Torah. It was really quite amazing to see how they would transcend the horrors of battle.
That's right. So that's the frumer boys, you know, within the limitations that they have imposed upon. They ask these shilas. There's also another, I forgot it, a great story of how an Erev Yom Kippur or whatever, they had to bring a Sefer Torah out to the to get them to lane before a battle. There's all kinds of things that the religious people are being moser nefesh, and that's where they're being moser nefesh to try to make these portable synagogues on the bases that the government's not going to provide anything for. So they're right. There's mesiris nefesh asking shilas too. That's part of it. There's no question about it. Okay, so that takes care of the angel. We're done with the angel. Now we move on to the next chapter, chapter 6, Perek Vav. Now the fun begins. Okay. V'yericho. Okay, you got those sheets? Oh, so, Rafal, can you maybe pass it out, please? And give me one. We're going to, might get to it. And if we don't get to it today, we'll certainly get to it tomorrow. Okay. So the pasuk says, "V'yericho sogeres umusugeres mipnei bnei Yisrael," and the city of Jericho. A double expression: sogeres umusugeres. Literally means closed and closed, closed, totally closed. Nobody going in, no one going in, nobody going out. It's like dead bolted. Is there any more? It would help if I had one. It would be good. Make another cut. Oh yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. So totally closed. Mipnei b'nei Yisrael, from the impending b'nei Yisrael. Ein yotzei v'ein ba. Nobody's going out. Nobody's coming in. It's total lockdown. Vayomer Hashem o Yeshua, and Hashem says to Yeshua. Now up to this point, Yeshua has no idea how they're conquering Yericho. Right. That's where they were laying siege against Yericho. Hashem says, "Re'ein asati v'yadechas Yericho v'esmalka gibor echol." See, I have given in your hand Yericho and its king, and all the mighty soldiers that make up Yericho. And this is what I want you guys to do. V'sabosam es ha'ir kol anshei ha'milchama hakeif es ha'ir pa'mechos. I want you to surround the city. All the soldiers that you have, I want you to go around it, hakeif es ha'ir pamachas, encircle the city one time. Ko sase sheishes yomim. This is what you should do for 6 days. For 6 days, you circle the city of Yericho. Pasuk dalet. V'shiva kohanim yisu shiva shoifrois hayoivlim lifnei ha'aron. And every day, seven kohanim should carry seven shoifros that are capable of blowing. And they will walk lifnei ha'aron before the ark. So what do we got over here? It's a little bit different than before, where the kohanim were carrying the ark, so to speak. I mean, the kohanim are carrying the ark, but you got kohanim in front of the ark as well, with seven shofros. Ubayoyim ha'shvi, and on the seventh day, tasoba sa'ir sheva pamim, encircle the city seven times. And what do I want them to do all the time? Va'kohanim yisku ba'shofros, and the kohanim should blow the shofar. They're doing that every day. It's not clear from the text, but that's what it was. They blew it every day. And also on the seventh day. And will be when they extend the blowing of the shofar with that shofar on that seventh day. When you will all hear the voice of the shofar. Yoriu chol ha'am trua gedola. The entire nation will cry out a great shout, and the walls of the city will fall tachteha in its place, and the entire people will come up against their enemies opposite them, and they will go to battle. That is the instruction that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them. So, indeed, Yoshua gives this instruction to the Jewish people. So right away you see there's a lot of sevens going on over here. A lot of sevens. And we'll talk a lot about the idea of seven. Seven is the idea of bringing, doing everything the world needs and then resting. It's the idea of Hashem's Hashkacha. He created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. And, we have lots of sevens over here. You got the 7 days of encircling, you got the seven kohanim blowing the seven shofros, you got the seven times going around, and we will see that the wall fell on a Shabbos, which is the seventh day of the week, during the seventh time going around. So obviously, to show that there's a lot of spiritual things going on over here. So now, what happens? Pasuk Vav, Vayikra Yeshua binun al kohanim. Yeshua calls out to the kohanim. Yarmalemi says to them, Su'u es aron habris, pick up, carry the Ark of the Covenant. And also, v'shiva kohanim yisu shiva shofros yoivlim lifnei aron Hashem. And seven kohanim will carry seven shofros before the Ark. Right? That's what he tells them to do. V'yomer pasuk zayin ala'am, he tells the people, Ivru v'sobu es a'ir, pass by the Ark, get in front of the Ark, v'sobu es a'ir, and circle the city. And the chalutz, the best soldiers, that's God, Reuven, half of Manasseh, you're the vanguard, you will go in front of the ark. It seems from the order going on over here that the regular soldiers are going first, the better soldiers are going second, unusual, then the people, the kohanim with the seven shofros, and then the ark. Okay. That's what's going on. Right? Vayehi, so that's what he commanded. Pasaches, Vayehi, Ka'amur, Yeshua, La'am, Vishiva, Kohanim, Nosim, Shiva, Shavros, Yilim, Lifnei Hashem, Arvu, Saku, Vashofras, Rambis, Hashem, Aleich, Achareyem. And it was, as they heard, Ka'amur, Yeshua, when Yeshua spoke to the people. Right? And he spoke to the seven Kohanim who were carrying the seven Shofras. They were supposed to pass in front and blow the Shofras. And the iron breeze, Hashem, went before them. Pasuk test. V'chalutz holeich lifnei ha'kohanim, and the armed soldiers, the vanguard, they went before the priests. Tokei ha'shofars are blowing the shofar. V'amaseif, and the rear guard holeich acharei ha'aron. The rear guard, Shevet Dan, went after the ark. Holoch v'takov v'shofros, as they were all blowing the shofars. So that's what was happening. They're getting themselves into quote unquote marching band formation. It's really what it was. Not battle formation, marching band formation. And Yeshua commanded the people, don't scream out. Don't make any noise. Nothing should come out of your mouth. Until I tell you to shout out. And then you will shout out. So what happens? Yud Alpha, Yaseber and Hashem Asir Akev Pamechos. The ark went around the city one time. And they came back to the camp and they rested that night. Yud Beis, Vayashkim. I'm doing a lot of soon because it's all one idea. So Vayashkim Yeshua Bavogi, Yeshua gets up early in the morning. Vayisa Kodim Asaran Hashem. The Kohanim pick up the ark. Yud Gimel Veshiva Kohanim Nosim Shiva Shofar Seyolim Vnei Aron Hashem. Halchim Aloch Vatukah Veshofaros. And the seven Kohanim that are carrying the seven Shofaros, they go before the ark and they're blowing the shofars. Vachalutz Halch Lifneim, and the vanguard goes before them. Amasev Halach Achrei Aron, and the rear guard goes behind them. Achrei Aron Hashem Halach Vatukah Veshofaros. After blowing the shofar, Vayesobu Asair Bayom Hasheni, and they encircled the city on the second day. Pamachas one time the same way. They came back to the camp. That's what they did for 6 days. Okay, so let's take a look in our booklet in the Parshios B'Sefer Nevi'im. I'm skipping a little bit. We're going to go to page Mem Zion, the bottom paragraph. Okay, Mem Zion in the bottom paragraph, where we go to skip the bold print and sign the smaller print paragraph with the word Kimo. So he makes an interesting observation over here. He says, "Kamo lifnei kishvuaim." It's been about 2 weeks ago. Beis Avaras Yarim, when they crossed the Jordan River. They crossed the Jordan River on the 10th of Nisan. They waited till after Pesach, and now it's the night of Chaf Beis. So it's almost 2 weeks. It's 12 days since they crossed the Jordan River. Shuv nosim hayom b'chaf Beis b'Nisan hakohanim saran. So again, the Kohanim are carrying the ark on the 22nd of Nisan. Simen va'os, it's a sign, l'shechina halachas lifneichem, that the Shechina, the divine presence, is going before them, v'kovesh islam is Yericho, and is conquering Yericho. Aval apam, but this time, ain't aron halach b'rosh yom, but the ark is not going in front of the people like it did when they crossed the Jordan River. El makdimim aso ha-kohanim atogim ha-shofros. But rather, the Kohanim blowing the shofros are in front of the ark. And zichronos rabim bavari niskru shome etkias, and there's a lot of memories coming to the people when they're hearing that shofar blow. Ayelo shel Yitzchak akarav tamuraso, the ram's horn, that was the ram that was used instead of Yitzchak at the Akedas Yitzchak. Yom matan Torah mitecha eish lifnei kerboim shana, the giving of the Torah amidst fire that happened almost 40 years ago. Masas amidra pi Hashem, the traveling in the desert was by the blowing of the shofar. V'yom adin v'yom atru b'echad l'chodesh hashvi, and the day of judgment on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah, when we blow the shofar. Malchus Hashem b'zichronos, the kingdom of Hashem, and the memory of Hashem b'kol shor with the shofar. Right, so they're remembering all these things. Alei Elokim b'tzra Hashem is elevated with the blowing of the shofar. But also, lifnei kohanim tok ha-shofar smis yatsim ha-chalutz, but before the kohanim go the vanguard. Arboim Elef, B'nei God, B'nei Reuben, Chas Yishev, Menashe, 40,000 of the tribes of God, Reuben, Half of Menashe. Halochim, Mekayimim, Havtachasim, that are fighting and fulfilling their promise. V'ama Asif, and the rear guard. V'cholam Hochim, Achrei Oro. Now turn to the next page. And now the next paragraph is very interesting. Amem Ches. Now, look, they gotta figure out, like, what's going through the minds of the people in Yericho over here. Right? They see the waters flying up 2 weeks ago. They're going nuts. And now the Jews are getting into some kind of formation. So look what's going on. Gibore hachayel asher b'Yericho, the great soldiers that are in Yericho, hayoshim al-chamasa, that are sitting by the walls, lahagenel, to protect them, mipnei Yisrael, against the Jewish people. Omdim tohim v'nidhamim l'ra'ayneim. They're standing and they're wondering, what are they seeing in front of their eyes? The Jewish people, it's time already. Lo sololo, there's no ramparts. Lo doyak, different types of military equipment. Lo hatkavach azizis, no frontal attack. Lo yurias chitzim, no shooting of arrows. Lo tzvachas mochama, no screams of battle. Lo hashmas kol, you're not making a lot of noise. Ela tahalucha shketa lemayfes amakifa eschamas ir. It's a quiet march. It's going around the walls of the city. Shabarosha rivos lochamim chalutzim. There's thousands and thousands of soldiers. Vachareim kfutza katana shaltoke shofars, and a small group of guys blowing a shofar. Bem tzoroim emes aron bris Hashem, in the middle is the ark. Ukanir hayim achusak should be kebeged, klil tiferes. It's like it's surrounded. It's an image of surrounded in a beautiful cloak of glory. Vachar v'od rivos mibnei Yisrael, then many, many other thousands behind it. V'chi b'derech mishuneh kazos choshim hem lizgabel giborach Yericho. In this mishugana battle form, they're going to conquer the land. They're going to destroy Yericho. What are they doing? They're going on a march. A peaceful march. Where's your left flank? Where's your right flank? It's like totally no military strategy. Mark is at terem ro mimem. They never saw anything like this. V'hatid hema goveres v'olechas miyom liyom. And the wonderment just continues every day for 6 days. So what's going on over here? So as Hashem promises, as a Messiah shalech lifnecha, my fear I will cast before you. I will confound the whole nation that you come upon. Meaning to say, hamumim heim, mechusare onim heim, these blemished people, the people who lack the courage, they don't even shoot one arrow against the Jews. They don't even throw one rock at the Jews. And that goes on for 6 days. As Rachav said, our hearts have melted. No spirit has come up against them. In other words, you're seeing an unbelievable miracle that's going on over here. The Jews are just walking around peacefully, and these bloodthirsty Canaanites are just watching. And, after a while, it would goad them into attack, do something. But they're really scared. Ubitom ha-taluch ha-shketa misov le'ir. And what happens? They're finished with the little walk around the city. Hem chosim b'shekel machlot. They come back quietly to Gilgal. Ve'enem yachsim klal yoshev le'ginov. They don't even care. They don't even think about the people who are up in the walls of Yericho guarding it and the possible war. Shisha yamim choser marzim shuna. For 6 days, this unusual sight is seen. Vinem yodin keselogiv, and the people in Yericho don't know how to react to this. So Hashem is setting up the expectation. He's setting up the drama. Okay, what's going to be? What's going to be? So that we'll see tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem. We'll see as the drama unfolds. But already you see the enemies are frightened. And that is part of the psychological warfare that Hashem did play with these enemies. And we'll see how Hashem, so to speak, through Derech HaTeva, is able to bring miraculous victories for Jewish people. So tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, we'll do this piece from Rav Dessler, and we'll explain what the nature of Jewish battles are, Mirtz Hashem.